Okay, so leading into the second episode.
Okay.
Do we need a second intro, or do we just say, this is part two?
Yeah, okay. I mean, you can do a second intro if you want, like a second...
No, I don't need to do a second intro, but just, hey everybody, this is part two of our series on the Stanford Prison Experiment. If you haven't listened to part one, why are you listening to this? Go back. Do your homework. Listen to things in order, you absolute rubes. Read your naval reports. Are you ready for part two?
Theme song.
Theme song.
All right, so.
hey, Martin, do you remember where we left off?
I think I do. I think we left off at the results section of a fascinating study by Philip Zimbardo that was published for weird reasons in the Naval Reports Review, despite the fact that they've done everything possible to make sure it has nothing to do with the Navy.
It's on land, for God's sake.
It's on land. It is pretending to put people in contact with Palo Alto police, who, as far as I understand it, are also land-based.
They are land-based, they're not, yes. They do not
they're
swim.
They're not aquatic mammals. If Palo Alto PD was, in 1971, comprised primarily of manatees...
We take it all back.
Yeah, I will recant this statement as untrue, but my understanding is that they were not sea-based. But nevertheless, this naval report, well, we don't need to summarize it. Go back and listen.
We don't need to summarize. Go listen to part one.
What are we doing here? Okay, Christina, how does this exciting episode wrap up?
So the results, what are the results of this four-day study?
4 days. It was originally supposed to be 2 weeks, right?
Originally it was supposed to be 2 weeks. It only lasted 4 days. And then someone, the article doesn't say who, came to their senses and called it off. There's no, in none of the literature that I have read so far, says who made the absolute decision to be done with the study at day four. It was very strange.
But
I'm sure it probably says something in the Lucifer effect, but the Lucifer effect was written decades after the experiment.
Right. It is 600 pages long.
And it's 600 pages long. And if you listen to our memory episode, we know that memory can be suggestible, can have some molding and shaping over time.
Right.
So who knows how reliable his memory decades after the fact.
Even a contemporaneous report would be subject to, you know, inaccuracies, but certainly decades later. Okay, so somebody called it off. Either our principal investigator, who is just one of three authors and refuses to take accountability for any of it, or maybe it's the 20-year-old research assistant who is doing this for college credit and a recommendation.
And to be fair, I don't know that the assistant was actually 20.
We know nothing about their actual condition. We are simply speculating based on undergraduate research assistants that we've had for comedic effect.
For comedic effect.
All right. So.
So from the paper, Zimbardo says, quote, although it is difficult to anticipate exactly what the influence of incarceration will be upon, paraphrasing, the prisoners and the guards, the results of the present experiment support that many commonly held conceptions of prison life and validate anecdotal evidence supplied by articulate ex-convicts. So Zimbardo only listens to the articulate ex-convicts.
Sure. Yep.
But he said that their study, this simulated prison, this mock prison, supports many facets that are reported from real prisons.
Right.
So his study is very real.
It's a very real study. It's the realest study that anyone's ever done. And he did have a formerly incarcerated person as a consultant on this too, right?
Correct. Okay. Yes. So they reported increased negative affect. your affect or AFFECT is a psychological principle of how it's like outward.
Yes.
Can you define affect better than I am currently defining affect? So if you have a negative affect, you're very flat. Things are very removed. Things are very down. Like a downer,
right?
And if you have a positive affect, you're positive, you're outgoing, you're bubbly, you're interacting, you're talking to people, you're laughing.
Yeah, I think of it as like a personality baseline. It is not your, it's not your emotions, because emotions are tend to be like these discrete and punctuated. There's a word I'm trying to think of that I'm not getting, but kind of instantaneous things, whereas affect is this more general demeanor which, you know, more punctuated, more instantaneous, emotional, but also personality and responses take place. That's how I...
And negative affect is most commonly associated with depression, right, with anxiety, with those very like down psychological disorders. So they're saying that the prison environment increased the amount of negative affect. Mm-hmm. So the prisoners became more flattened, mm-hmm, and spoke less, were less outgoing over time.
Yeah.
The prisoners expressed intentions of doing harm to others more throughout the experiment, and they also became more self-deprecating. And Zimbardo interprets this as internalizing the prison, of taking the external environment of the prison and placing it internal, of having it be a judgment upon themselves and it affecting their judgment of themselves.
Okay.
Zimbardo said that the interactions between the guards and the prisoners, so the study participants who were assigned to be guards and the study participants who were assigned to be prisoners, sure, were very negative, were very hostile, were affrontive, and were dehumanizing. And one of the, I believe, classically and widely known interactions was one guard and one prisoner. And this guard started out as a, quote, normal person. Mm-hmm. And a few days into the study, I can't remember if it was day two or day three, he forced the prisoner to clean the toilet with bare hands.
Oh.
So that really dehumanizing, right, interaction with bodily, yes, waste was not dictated that the guard had to, right, do this. The guard chose to have, right, this interaction with this prisoner, wrote in his journal that he didn't know why he was doing this to the prisoner, but he forced the prisoner to do that. Also, isn't it part of the Geneva Convention and like human basic human rights that people have the right to access the bathroom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Part of the prison was they had toilets, right, but they were the guards were allowed to ban prisoners from using the toilets as a punishment.
Oh, wow.
And if they were banned from using the toilet, they had buckets by their, uh-huh, bed, and they had to get permission from the guards to empty the buckets, oh, by, wow, their bed. So some of the prisoners in these very, very tight, yeah, quarters were sitting with buckets of feces and urine, wow, just sitting there because the guards wouldn't let them flush feces and urine down, wow, the toilet.
That's... It's a good thing. Good thing they had those waivers.
Yeah, the signing of the civil rights. Yeah, the guards were told that they weren't allowed to do physical violence, so they did, quote, verbal affronts instead. They would call the prisoners names. They would insult the manhood of the prisoners. Uh-huh. Everything that you can think of was something that the guards,
right,
said to the prisoners. There was also physical violence. So I don't know why Zimbardo really focuses on, yeah, physical violence not being, right, allowed when there absolutely was. So I don't understand. But it was also, there were also prisoner to prisoner interactions and prisoner aggression directed towards the, right, guards. So it was very everything in all directions all at once.
Yeah. So the fact that the guards were... This is something that I'm not sure yet. Maybe it will become clearer as we go, or maybe this thing will remain kind of a muddled mess. I don't know. But it seems like allowing the guards to just kind of do what they will also messes up your conclusions.
Yeah, because there's no prison that doesn't have a control hierarchy. Well,
so certainly there's that, right? For all of this stuff that he's saying about, you know, this is an exact model of a prison, right? It's my understanding that prisons do have chains of command. But also, what am I trying to say? These guards are importing specific types of punishment and insults from the broader culture. And
yes. Zimbardo sort of insinuates that the guards started out playing guards or playing to the expectations of guards. And then they learned that they liked sadism and they became guards. So it was this transition of like playing at sadism. Oh, I was just pretending to be sadistic. Okay. And then the guards reported realizing that they enjoyed the sadism. They enjoyed enforcing arbitrary rules. They enjoyed the intimidation and sort of transformed into actual guards. So everyone was pretending at first, but then they really got into it and really became a guard because of the forces of the environment. So getting a little bit into the timeline, like I've said a few times, the study was supposed to last for 2 weeks. It ended at day four. Some prisoners had to be released because of extreme emotional depression, crying, rage, and acute anxiety. And these symptoms appeared in four subjects as early as day two. Wow. So 24 hours into the experiment, Zimbardo reports depression, crying, rage, acute anxiety. A fifth subject was treated for a psychosomatic rash. I don't know if people know the definition of psychosomatic, but psychosomatic means effectively coming from the psyche. So Philip Zimbardo is saying that one person was so upset that they got a rash covering his entire body. And my question is, was this not the delousing spray? Was this not the limited access to hygiene? Was this not the sheets contacting the body? Was this not the buckets of urine and feces sitting in the cells? How did you know it was psychosomatic? Like, in what made you diagnose that? He's not a medical doctor. He's a psychologist. So, of course, a psychologist is going to see a rash and say psychosomatic. So, on day two, they were down four prisoners out of the 10. So they're down to five prisoners, because the fifth also, I believe, was released. Again, this was all very like hazy numbers-wise. Mm-hmm. But of the remaining prisoners, only two said they were not willing to forfeit the money they had earned in order to be paroled. So they were given the option. They were like told, hey, if you give up all your money, you can get out of here. And only two said they were not willing to do that. So everyone wanted to, all the prisoners wanted to leave. The experiment was terminated after 6 days, according to the Naval report. I've also heard four days other places, but the prisoners were delighted at their good fortune and they were so happy to get out of that absolute disaster. The guards were upset at the decision to stop the experiment. They really enjoyed the power. They really enjoyed playing and being and becoming guards. And they were reluctant to give that up. Quote, one guard did report at being upset at the suffering of prisoners and claimed to have considered asking to change his role to become one of them, but he never did so. And Zimbardo reported that different people responded differently to the environment. So half of the prisoners really strongly endured the environment, and not all of the guards were hostile. Only a subset of the guards were hostile. Some of the guards went beyond their role as guards and were extremely overtly hostile. Some were very passive guards that were kind of soft on the prisoners, and some were tough but fair. So even among the only 11 guards we have, Zimbardo stratifies them into three groups of some really took the bull by the horns and were as sadistic as possible. Some were really passive and some were fair and balanced. And just like all these old-timey psychology papers, we have to have a statement that the people who were in the experiment believed the experiment.
They totally believed it.
They totally believed it. It was so good. It was so real. Everyone believed it. So Ethical and legal restraints were placed on the prison. Quote, there was no involuntary homosexuality. There was no racism. There were no physical beatings. There was no threat to life by prisoners against each other or the guards. Which, again, I don't think that statement is true. So I don't know why he put it in there.
And once again, involuntary homosexuality means sexual assault because he is...
Yes.
So, because Zimbardo doesn't understand.
And for no racism, only one subject was Asian and all of the rest were white men. And I don't believe that Zimbardo said in this report or in the New York Times report if the non-white participant was a guard or a prisoner.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't, it was just... This whole, it's just, everything is weird. Everything is weird. It's all weird. But Zimbardo said that the results in this fake prison amplify the impact of real prisons or really galvanize real prisons.
Okay.
Quote, we feel there's abundant evidence that virtually all of the subjects at one time or another experienced reactions that went well beyond the surface demands of role playing and penetrated the deep structure of the psychology of imprisonment. So I feel like Zimbardo is saying, don't worry, we totally psychologically harmed people really convincingly. They were really convinced that they were harmed. We did a really good job harming people.
Right. All those bad things we said that prisons do, the reason why we need reform, we totally, totally did all those bad things to people.
We did those
ourselves. So
yeah. And Zimbardo... In the New York Times report and in the report to the Navy, he doesn't say what he's doing this whole time. He doesn't say how much he's there. He doesn't say how much he's talking to the guards. He doesn't say how much he's talking to the prisoners. He doesn't say what instructions he's giving. He doesn't say his thoughts and feelings at the time. And there are things that came out that, like, his girlfriend at the time and now his wife was the person who convinced him to stop the study. There are these different lore and retellings that are just really, really strange, right? Just very, very strange, with so much missing information from the reports that are like the foundational reports of the study. The prisoners were mic'd the whole time to hear what they talked about. And Zimbardo said that 90% of the conversation was details about the prison, and 10% of the conversation was about life outside of the prison. And Zimbardo uses this to prove that the prisoners really felt like they were in prison.
Okay.
But also, these are total strangers to each other, and they're having a shared experience. And when you have strangers having a shared experience, they talk about that shared experience.
A pretty unique shared experience, too.
Yeah.
Like, hey, remember that time we signed up for a study and then were fake arrested and then we were living in the basement of a building on Stanford University.
Stanford Psychology Building.
Remember when that happened right now? do you want to talk about that?
Oh my God. Yeah. So Zimbardo uses that 90%, 10% conversation as a factoid towards they really believed the simulation. They were really living the simulation. But to me, I'm like, that's how conversation works. That's how you talk to people.
Maybe
you talk about, hey, we're doing this. Here's what we're doing.
Maybe he should have read a study that mapped out how conversations work move by move with 45 pages of rules. Maybe if he had done that.
Well, don't worry. He's going to listen to every episode of our podcast.
And
he will listen to that episode.
And then he'll know what he should have done differently.
He'll know what he should have done. Yes. The guards were more aggressive towards prisoners when they were out of the way of recording equipment. So I'm trying to not be salacious in part because I don't want to be salacious, but also... Zimbardo doesn't report specific details in these reports in the same way that he does in his later books and his later talks and his seminars and TV interviews and all those things. But effectively, the guards did more punishments, said worse things, and they tried to hide punishments from Zimbardo and the warden. and they knew where the recording equipment was, so they would sneak out of view or out of line of sight of recording equipment so that they could do worse things to the prisoners. The guards first exhibited aggression in response to a perceived threat. This shifted from trying to manage the perceived threat into continuous aggression towards the prisoners. So one guard kept a prisoner that was considered to be a troublemaker in solitary confinement longer than the rules that the guards had set allowed. And that guard tried to hide it from the other guards and from the experimenters because that guard thought everyone else was too soft on the prisoners. That's what that guard said. After the experiment was done, the guards said they were just playing the role of the tough guard. They were just playing around. Also, as evidence of dehumanization or evidence of this internalization of becoming a prisoner, Zimbardo says that the prisoners referred to themselves by their number when a Catholic priest visited instead of their Christian names. And they also asked a public defender to bail them out of jail. Oh, so interesting. There were a few visits. Right. One was a Catholic priest to the I want to hear an interview from this priest so bad. Where the priest shows up, there's buckets of urine and feces. Right. There's men being emasculated in dresses. There's a psychology professor. There are students pretending to be prisoners, asking to be broken out of prison.
There's clearly a boy in a trench coat with a mannequin arm and a broom.
There's Vincent Adult Man as the very real warden of this very real prison. So the prisoners asked the Catholic priest to connect them to a lawyer.
Yeah.
Is how I remember this. And then later the public defender came, who was like the brother of the sister of the cousin of one of the prisoners. And the public defender came and started to work on bailing them out of this fake prison that wasn't real.
What is happening? Wow.
Yeah. So this was all deteriorating. Towards the end of the 6 days, the author, Philip Zimbardo, had a parole board hearing. Yes. So he called the prisoners in front of him. I believe it was one by one. And he asked the prisoners if they would forfeit the money in order to be paroled. 3 of the 5 said yes, even though the original incentive for participating had been the promise of money, which I don't believe, right? Because they selected for people who were socially well off, people who were middle class, people who were available for 2 weeks during the summer. So I don't believe, I believe that they were like thrill seeking, new experience seeking. Maybe money was cool, but not necessarily the main part of it. Because these were people who were available to just drop everything for 24 hours a day for 2 weeks.
So the parole was, if you give up the money, you can go. And 3 of the 5 people said, yes, I'll do that.
3 of the 5 remaining prisoners, because 5 of them had already been released.
Wouldn't it have been more, like, from an experimental design aspect? So when I say better, I don't mean ethically, because there is no better. But wouldn't it be better from an experimental design perspective to say, to allow them to leave even and keep their money?
I believe they did get to keep their money. I think he was like asking them if they would, because he wanted more proof that they thought this was real. That they were willing to give up money to get out.
Right. But if he had just said like, hey, look, you've been paroled, or rather to just say, hey, do you want to just leave the experiment now? Drop the parole board fiction. Then you're actually going to see if these people are like, no, I shouldn't leave because I'm actually a prisoner. Like that it seems like that's going to give you a more powerful, I don't know, thing to interpret. This all seems so weird. It's
very strange. Yeah.
I'll save my assessment until the end here, but there's something going on with Zimbardo.
Oh, he's part of it is he talks about, oh, if you put people in this environment, the people assigned to be guards will become mm-hmm. guards. The people assigned to be, but then what about him? He assigned himself. To be the superintendent. Right.
That's what I was holding off on saying was because I thought maybe we'd get to a point at the end, but that's exactly it, right? He is clearly becoming a superintendent. He is clearly, and I don't know if that's better or worse. Like, I don't know if that supports his hypothesis more.
It absolutely
but
does.
But also makes him a much worse person if he thought he was correct, if he thought his hypothesis was correct, he should have anticipated that he would become terrible, and there should have been a protection against that. Like there should be a buttress against this turning into just a total nightmare like it did.
Yes, and part of the reason that I feel so much animosity towards him and towards this experiment is in his original papers, he didn't report anything about himself being the superintendent.
Oh, wow.
And then when he had books to sell, then he did his whole, woe is me, I didn't even realize that I was part of this too, that I too am evil. Me, the great Stanford psychology professor, I too had evil within me. And it feels so played up like a salesperson, right? That he's selling his idea and you can buy it in book
form. It's also his literal hypothesis. Like, of course you were. That's not a surprise that we come to later that even you were subject to it. Your entire hypothesis was that you would be. Like,
But if we take it even a step further, the type of person who would design and execute this experiment is fundamentally different than the type of person who would look at this and say, absolutely not. Are you insane?
Right?
So the root of everything still has these elements of psychopathy, of sadism, of Machiavellianism, of all of these elements. He didn't take the assessments. He's the root. He's the seed. He's the seed from which this all grows. Right,
of course, because if we're trying to disprove this dispositional hypothesis, the hugest confound here is that he was not randomly selected nor randomly assigned on any level, and that he is internally part of the prison. Like,
if you were doing this in silico, right? Let's go back to our computers. Let's go back to our friend the computer. You would have 100 to 1,000,000 different simulations of different types of people setting up this experiment.
Right. Yes.
And the people who set up the experiment have the most control and impact on what the outcome is. And he selected everything to get the result that he got. Absolutely. So I'm not saying at all when I criticize the study that the guards were not violent. They absolutely were violent. Sure. The guards were sadistic. Sure. The guards did violence. So I'm not disagreeing with that. That absolutely happened. What I'm saying is his hypothesis is that you can disprove the dispositional hypothesis. Yes. That you can disprove that prisons are the way they are because people who are sadistic are attracted to be guards, and people who break the rules of society end up as prisoners. Right. I'm saying he can't test that at all because he is a confound.
He's a huge confound. Yes. Literally everything he does makes it more difficult for him to test his own hypothesis.
Yes, and he got a storied career as a celebrated psychologist who was invited everywhere to speak. He wrote psychology textbooks. He was the president of the American Psychological Association. He won awards. He traveled. He gave talks. He was endowed here and there. Yeah, you know what I mean? This is the foundation of everything. He became a hotshot. The only reason people know him is because of this study. and it has all of the elements of someone who absolutely is pushing the boundaries in order to get ahead, of people who are willing to sacrifice other people in order to get what they want. And that's the personality type. That's a
disposition.
That is a disposition that is seen in CEOs, that's seen in presidents, that's seen in politicians, that has been tested. Over the years, it's been tested that there absolutely are different types of people who are attracted to different types of jobs. And people who are in those jobs select people who are similar to them to continue in those jobs. So CEOs select people similar to them to continue as CEOs in the same way. Politicians select people who are similar to them who have these sorts of, I don't care if it hurts other people, I'm going to do what I want to do.
Okay.
That's known. That's absolutely known and established. So Zimbardo saying, I have proven that he was absolutely willing to sacrifice 20 psychology students so that he could have a career. That's what this is. And that's why it's so frustrating to me, is like everything that he says happened, probably happened, but every interpretation that he has of it is like haywire. Everything is crossed over. Itself, short-circuiting all over the place.
What we're saying is that if he had consulted with us, we would have helped him do this experiment better.
We would have helped him not do this. We would have said, do not do sadistic treatment of, like, almost children, no, of course, right? Of like, 18-year-old, like, no, do not do this. In what world? For what? For what purpose?
Exactly. So in addition to being just ethically sort of indefensible.
Imagine in the year of our Lord 2024, Martin, imagine you sitting down and writing a contract that involves the suspension of civil rights.
Yes, my department head would have... This is the sort of thing that a colleague and I joke about, right? Just like, you know, dark jokes about like the sorts of studies that we're going to do that are clearly just unethical. We have no, there is no level on which we are serious about doing them. This is the sort of thing we would come up with as we're talking about basically trolling, you know, the Institutional Review Board. We're talking about ways to make our department heads, you know, hair fall out, ways of like, you know, getting fired because, you know, proposing something to the dean that will absolutely get us fired immediately. It's this kind of thing.
Right. And that form of humor comes from having the understanding of how beyond just, the pale
it's just not even possible. It's not even plausible. Exactly. Not even plausible. Yeah.
And Philip Zimbardo is a different kind of man. And he saw this and he said... Yeah. Let's go. Let's go, as the kids say. Say less. Get in line. Call your besties. We're building a prison.
We're building a prison. Oh my God. This is,
that's a pop culture reference of the day.
Ooh.
They're trying to build a prison. They're trying to build a prison. As much new metal as I can get into this episode.
Wow.
It will make me happy. I will be happy.
I didn't entirely see that coming. I did not see a system of a down.
There's no way you could not have anticipated a system of a down reference. Are you kidding me? You know that I listened to System of a Down 22 out of 24 hours in the day. And you know that System of a Down continuously sings about
prisons. I do know that. I believe this is the why it's contested whether I am Gen X or a millennial. My knowledge of System of a Down, I think, pegs me as a millennial. So,
oh, are they millennials?
I think so, yeah.
I thought they came out in the 90s. So I was like one when they released their
early
albums.
Early 2000s?
No.
It's got to be.
No, it's gotta,
this is not a very good, definitely legitimate pop culture reference today because I don't think we can verify its legitimacy because we don't even know the first thing about it. Despite being self-described.
It came out in 1991 and that's it. That's what I'm saying. Getting back to the story I'm saying that so that you can't argue with me about System of a Down anymore, so I can just be right and have the last word.
I approve.
So at this parole board hearing, three of the five say they would give up their money in order to be paroled. Mm-hmm. And then Zimbardo, sadistically, in order to make the prisoners sweat, sent them back to their cells to await the parole decision. And he did this to see if they would just leave, I think, if they would just get up and leave. And he said that the fact that they waited to hear his decision for parole meant that they viewed themselves as prisoners. So this gets back to the plausibility. This gets back to dehumanization, internalization, all of those concepts.
Yes.
So getting into the interpretation of these results, getting into what this means, there are a few core concepts, and one of them is the pathology of power. So being a guard carries social status. You have a social status in a hierarchy that is higher than prisoners. And the guards said afterwards in their reports and their diaries that the power was exhilarating, that they didn't have to justify themselves. They didn't have to justify their demands. They could do and demand whatever they wanted to. Quote, the most hostile guards on each shift moved spontaneously into the leadership roles of giving orders and deciding on punishments. Quote. And my question to Philip Zimbardo is, how is that not evidence for self-selection of power? That the hostile guards became leaders.
Right.
And they led the other guards.
Right. And he said that they didn't do any pretests on like level of like personality types or anything.
He says that they did, and that they evenly split the prisoners and the guards to have even representation of the qualities.
But that's not the question. The question is, did the ones who scored the highest on, you know, whatever hostile, sadistic personality types naturally, quote unquote, become the leaders?
So Zimbardo would say that there were no sadistic people because he selected normal Caucasian men.
That's right.
Had no social disadvantages.
Sure.
So nobody was sadistic, according to the pre-experimental
Okay, great.
To Zimbardo.
Great.
You know there are no charts. You know there are no tables. You know I can't point to anything and say, look right here, because it's not there. It's like...
Right.
It's not there.
It might be there in one of these 700 pages of the Lucifer effect. However, the point we're trying to make here is that this study doesn't report this, that we were meant to just take this from that initial study. We're just supposed to not ask that question. And
the Lucifer effect didn't come out for decades after the Stanford prison experiment. So there were decades where Zimbardo was famous that there wasn't access to all this information. Wow. I keep deviating, even though I just want to power through. The only reason he wrote the Lucifer effect, probably one, was a shit ton of money. But two, he served as a consultant and expert witness on the trials of the Abu Ghraib prison guards.
Yes.
And according to Philip Zimbardo, the Stanford prison experiment proves that the Abu Ghraib prison guards who enacted physical violence, sexual torture, humiliation, there were like absolute human right atrocities.
Yes, absolutely.
And Philip Zimbardo's interpretation of his quote experiment is that the prison guards should not have been held liable for the actions that they performed. So he testified that the prison guards who did this violence and this torture were only acting that way because of the prison environment. Sure. Therefore, they should not go to prison.
Okay.
He was devastated when the guard that he was testifying on behalf of still received a prison sentence. And he released the Lucifer effect to argue this. So the first half of the book is a day-by-day retelling of the Stanford Prison Experiment. Right. And then the second half of the book goes into the Bush administration, into the torture that was sanctioned mm-hmm. by the Bush administration, goes into the Abu Ghraib torture events mm-hmm. that the prison guards perpetrated. Mm-hmm. And he was devastated. He was emotionally devastated when his guard that he testified for went to jail, because the guard and his wife referred to him as Uncle Phil. They were Oof. So close and so friendly over the course of this trial that they had this mm-hmm. like relationship with each other. It was so disgusting. Mm. I don't understand how you can interpret what happened at Abu Ghraib and say that the people who did this aren't responsible for their actions because the Bush administration is also evil. Like, what?
I am rarely in favor of send that person to prison. I think prison abolition is likely the most ethical way through this. If that had been his argument, that prisons necessarily create negative effects for all people, therefore they should go away, hold the Bush administration responsible for creating these, you know, I don't know, these conditions of violence, I might be into that conversation.
State-sanctioned torture, right?
Yeah.
Right?
I would be bizarre
because he
went to hear that conversation. But it sounds like he also is not, as I think we talked about this, you know, last time. He also isn't kind of an absolute prison abolitionist, because that would actually seem to be the necessary or the logical outcome of.
It becomes really confusing because I don't know what his true. Morals and his true ideals are. And I was reading the second half of The Lucifer Effect, and I was trying to get an understanding of if he doesn't think that the guards who perpetrated, I'm remembering now, there were prisoners that died from the stress positions that they were placed in. If he doesn't think that the guards who committed state-sanctioned murder should go to prison, then certainly he will call for punishment of Donald Rumsfeld, of George Bush, of all of these people. And he didn't. He listed each name of each person who played a role in torture occurring at Abu Ghraib. And he just said what the role was and moved on.
Right. Yeah. So
and he didn't have like a plan of how do you change this? How do you change... You know what I mean?
I agree. And also to sort of complete what I was saying before, because I think you can make the case that these guards shouldn't go to prison if you also make the case that nobody should go to prison. It would be very, very weird to start we shouldn't send these people to prison with the guards who tortured and killed folks at Abu Ghraib. That it would be weird to start there rather than to start with the millions of people, literally millions of people who have gone to prison for other reasons. So I guess that's kind of the point, is that I'm not insensitive to his argument that there were conditions that contributed here.
No, absolutely not.
Insensitive to that
absolutely
at all. But it's weird to start there, to start with these particular people and go, oh yeah, these people definitely shouldn't be incarcerated. Now, the person who was just, you know, pulled over for doing almost nothing, you know, and gave the police officer attitude, that person should definitely go to prison. Like, you know, so I'm not insensitive to his argument, but it's a weird hill to die on.
Yes, everything is so bizarre. And saying that your study that you did 50 years ago, that wasn't really
a study.
That was so bizarre, that had every conflict of interest imaginable, that you have personally benefited from, proves that people who tortured and murdered prisoners shouldn't go to prison. Like, where do you get off? How?
Very strange.
And why? And why?
That those are not the conclusions I would be able to reach.
So bizarre. It's that thing I've been struggling with of the like kernel.
Right. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That people who are in power abuse their power, and that causes bad things to happen to other people. Yes. That kernel is there. And then his extrapolation of that kernel.
Yes. Yes.
just like takes 27 left turns.
Yes.
And then you look around and you say, I thought we started our walk together from the same place. How did we get here?
Yes.
How did we end up here? So back to the naval report. Back to the naval report. The pathology of power. Here we are. So effectively, over the course of these several days, the guards redefined prisoner rights, such as eating and sleeping conditions, as privileges. Mm. So the prisoners only got what used to be rights if the guards allowed them. The reward from the guards to the prisoners was granting approval to eat, approval to sleep, approval to use a bathroom, which again are all basic human rights in the Geneva Convention. Right. Another psychological concept that Zimbardo talks about is the pathological prisoner syndrome. And this gets a really close to, if you don't want to be depressed, then just don't be depressed anymore. Right?
Some real Dr. Phil advice.
And that's not what Zimbardo is saying. That's my interpretation of how he's presenting this. But basically, prisoners behave like prisoners because of pathological prisoner syndrome, where they tell themselves they're prisoners, therefore they start acting like prisoners. So prisoners have very defined coping strategies. And in the Stanford prison, in the experiment, there was an open rebellion on, I believe, day two. And he didn't really talk about the rebellion in the naval article. And then I read the New York Times article, and he talked a little bit about the open rebellion in the New York Times article, and it was very weird.
Mm.
Effectively, at first, there was a rebellion, and then the prisoner who initiated the rebellion was one of the five who left. And then the other prisoners who remained in the prison started turning against each other and became very self-interested instead of unionizing and coming together to support each other. And the prisoner said at the end of the experiment that at that point after the first rebellion, if they had stayed and maintained power together instead of splitting, that they would have been able to take over the prison. Basically, if they had used collective action, they could have taken over the prison, but instead they split and there was no meaningful change, which is very much like society. So good job. Zimbardo said that prisoners pretended to be sick to demand attention and receive help. And if you remember his psychosomatic rash, how do we know that the prisoners weren't sick? They were just pretending. Why are we saying that they're pretending? There was one prisoner who refused to eat, and he was seen as a troublemaker by the other prisoners. The guards would shame the prisoner who was on a hunger strike and say to the other prisoners, like, you guys would have your privileges if not for 8, 5, 7, 8. I'm just making that number up, but that's how the guards would talk about it. And the prisoners reported that the most aversive thing to them during the study was having to follow really arbitrary, really capricious decisions from the guards. So the guards would demand that prisoners smile or not smile, or laugh or not laugh, or behave in a certain way today that they didn't want yesterday. And it changed totally based on the whims of the guards. So because of this, the prisoners had what's called learned helplessness, and this is another term in depression or in psychology, where people just give up. They don't try anymore because they've learned that if they try, it will fail. So they learn to not try. And once again, we return to emasculation with our good friend Philip Zimbardo. He says, quote, "The prisoner uniforms resembled smocks or dresses, which made them look silly and enabled the guards to refer to them as sissies or girls. Wearing these uniforms without any underclothes forced the prisoners to move and sit in unfamiliar feminine postures." So again, we have these elements of sexual control, of feminization, of emasculation as tools for control. And I have my final quote. And it's a long quote, but it's the end of the paper. So that means, it means that we made it. Oh, before that, I actually want to talk about the prisoner riot really quick. So the prisoners, rioted and tried to take over the prison. And then five of them left. And then Zimbardo and the guards and company sort of started a rumor and sort of believed that the prisoner who initiated the riot was going to come back and attack them. So they moved every prisoner that was in the prison to a secondary location so that the prison would be empty, so that when this instigator came back to attack them, nobody would be there. And I think that was part of the inkling that Zimbardo had that this was going off the rails.
Yeah, you think?
Was this like built up paranoia of we're going to be attacked by this prisoner who's coming back to enact revenge on us, when there was no indication, I believe, from the prisoner that that was going to happen. Again, Zimbardo didn't talk about this whole like back and forth moving of the prisoner's paranoia in the naval report. He sort of offhand mentions it in the end of the New York Times article of this is how we knew it was the end, is I realized how paranoid I was getting, that sort of thing. And that's where I believe his girlfriend at the time worked to convince him to end.
You've been imprisoning some children in a basement.
Literally, you've been imprisoning children in a basement. Stop it. Stop.
Well, no. She wasn't worried about that. She was worried about the fact that you have imprisoned these children in a basement, and then you moved them to another place so one of the children who left won't come back and attack the children you're still holding. Maybe this has gone too far, sweetie.
Yeah, and the guards were really into it. So the guards, outside of their normally scheduled shifts, showed up to, quote, protect the prison because they were so paranoid that this prisoner, who wasn't actually a prisoner, was going to come back to this prison that wasn't actually a prison. It was bonkers. It was absolutely bonkers. So I haven't read that part in the Lucifer Effect yet, because I didn't get there before I made the concrete decision of this is insane. I need to go to the original source, which is this naval.
Was that article. The point at which your partner intervened and said, look, I think this has gone too far. We need to cut this short.
No, no. To Jeff's fault, he never tells me to stop ranting about things, which he should. He should say, you have to stop. You can't read this much about one psychologist from 1971. You have to stop. So I have to do a study that teaches him how to make me stop ranting.
Are you saying that Philip Zimbardo's partner is better than yours?
And by yes, I mean no, because it's very kind, right? It's very kind of him listen to me go, and another thing.
In fact, this makes me doubt that Philip Zimbardo had a PhD at all. If your partner tells you to stop doing the absolute nonsense that you insist on doing for several days on end, there's no way to actually get a PhD.
Exactly.
If I had been listening, if my partner had come in and said, you've been listening to Let the Music Play for four straight days while reading Cicero.
You've been watching a clip of Mike Myers and Kanye West.
I absolutely did watch that for days on end. Madly scrawling notes. Back again to that Always Sunny in Philadelphia, you know, meme. I had my whiteboards with string. It was, Yeah, if she had told me to stop, that would have been the end. No PhD for me.
Mm-hmm. No PhD. So here we are at the conclusion of the study. Quote, in conclusion, we believe this demonstration reveals new dimensions in the social psychology of imprisonment worth pursuing in future research. To which I pause and say, what new dimension? Like, what was the new dimension? There's no new dimension.
Also, future research, not by you, hopefully.
Not by you. Continuing on. In addition, this research provides a paradigm and information base for studying alternatives to existing guard training as well as for questioning the basic operating principles on which penal institutions rest. If our mock prison could generate the extent of pathology it did in such a short time, then the punishment of being imprisoned in real prison does not, quote, fit the crime, quote, for most prisoners. Indeed, it far exceeds it. Moreover, since both prisoners and guards are locked into a dynamic symbiotic relationship which is destructive to their human nature, guards are also society's prisoners. So the very last sentence of this first report of the Stanford Prison Experiment is, hey, guards have it bad. Guards are the prisoners of society.
If you think about it, guards are the real prisoners.
Guards are the real prisoners. Guards are the real victim.
If you think about it, guards wouldn't be in that position if it weren't for the prisoners.
If it weren't for society.
So in a way, the prisoners are really the ones who are torturing everyone. If you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Galaxy mm-hmm. brain.
Yeah, the first panel is prisoners are prisoners. The second panel is guards are prisoners. The third panel is Philip Zimbardo is a prisoner. And that is a meme that would do numbers on Reddit.
But remember our goal number three.
Goal number three was to make it to the conclusion.
Our goal number three was not to get sued or tweeted
you're
at.
You're right. Goal number three, no sue.
So let's not do that meme because that seems to be okay, inviting.
No. I don't think Philip Zimbardo maybe could read memes. You don't think he's 91.
He's 91. That's fair. Maybe if we had done this entire episode just as memes, we would have been safe.
Just as memes. Well, we have 3 to 4 so far, so okay. I think we could do it.
Yes.
All right, Martin. We're at the point where you tell me, what do you think of this experiment?
Like I said, I think this sounds like an idea that an undergrad had.
It was.
It was. And that. And you also said before, right, that there are so many other ways this could have been done that would have been less abusive and would have had fewer confounds. One of the things that you said is that, you know, on a college campus, you don't need to do this as an experiment. You can observe what happens in fraternity.
You can interview students about fraternities.
And in fact, when you said this student had imprisoned some people for funsies, that was my guess, was that this is probably a student in a Greek organization and that's how they did it.
The student was doing a experiment. Oh. It was like a student project, right? So it wasn't that the student at his house imprisoned some people.
How did that happen? So many adults made so many mistakes here.
Yes.
Ugh.
So one of the things I was going to say is this is our big finale episode, but this topic is massive. It's absolutely massive.
Yes.
So if we wanted to do a follow-up episode in the future where we focus again on one small part, we're not gestalt psychologists.
Right.
We cannot focus on everything. We have to pick one thing. We can pick the one thing and we could do an episode about the prison experiment prior to the Stanford prison experiment.
Oh, did that get written up? And
of course not.
Okay.
The Stanford prison experiment wasn't even written up. Of course it was not written up. All we have are Philip Zimbardo's tellings of what the student told him, right?
Yes.
But this isn't the first study of prisons. In the Naval Report, there were, I believe, 10 or so citations mm-hmm. at the end. Mm-hmm. So there were other studies before this. This is not the first one.
Right.
This is just the famous one because it was, again, bonkers. And if you watch videos, if you go on Wikipedia, there's like lists of all of the horrible, horrible sadistic things that the guards did, right?
Yeah.
So if you're looking for salacious, true crime, that sort of stuff, that's available.
Yes.
That's not what I'm trying to focus on. So I didn't want to put all of that in, but it's out there.
Yeah.
If you were grading this experiment as a professor, as a college professor, what grade would you give this experiment?
As a person who teaches undergrads, what would happen is we would have had the conversation of, what are you planning to do Phil, for this, for your final
Uncle
project.
Phil.
Uncle Phil, what are you planning to do for your final project? And the student would have proposed something like this. And I would have said, that's very interesting. And I would have left extensive notes. Now, for those first proposals, what happens is students will get a 0 out of 25 for a proposal that's not accepted. But then they will they're able to resubmit as many times as they need in order to get 25 out of 25 when they finally submit something that is not monstrous. So if little Phil Zimbardo had proposed this, this would get a 0 out of 25. There's just no way. There's no way. This gets a 0 out of 25. Phil has to resubmit this. If Phil continues to submit nonsense, Phil is not going to be able to proceed to the next step of, you know, writing up a literature review, much less collecting data and analyzing it. So this study simply doesn't happen unless little Phil Z goes ahead and proposes something that makes some sense.
Right. And one of the elements that you brought up towards the beginning is the review board, the institutional review board,
right,
that decides what studies can be done and what studies can't be done. And like I said in the first episode, the very first mention of the study in PubMed, when you put in Stanford Prison Experiment, PubMed is just a database that has indexed journals. Most reputable journals, mostly peer-reviewed journals, you can find in PubMed. The first reference to the Stanford Prison Experiment in PubMed is a letter written by another professor condemning Philip Zimbardo for having a conflict of interest where he's the person running the experiment and also deciding what is ethical and what is not ethical.
Right.
Because Philip Zimbardo's career is essentially built off of how shocking, how attention-grabbing the study was set, right?
Yes.
How like how much it made you clutch your pearls and say, oh my God, I'm not evil, though. I'm not evil.
Right.
His career is built off of that. So he had the conflict of interest where it was better for him if the study went haywire and he reported on it and it got attention.
Right. So I mentioned this in the introduction to a previous episode that got recorded after we actually recorded the episode, where I mentioned that institutional review boards were in part formed not too long after this study in response to nonsense like this.
And not only this, this is not the only study.
No, not even close.
The Stanley Milgram study where he shocked people, or where he had other, where he had other people shock people.
Yeah, right.
This study with 24-hour a day imprisonment.
Right. And then also some medical things like the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, obviously,
you know, where men were given syphilis without knowing that they had been given syphilis so they could be studied for the progression of the disease.
Well, and they were told they were being given treatment for it. And then not. I mean, it was just allowed to progress. And So things like this. And again, all manner of I don't know, torturous studies were done. And by the mid-70s, the federal government started requesting reports on the effects of some of these studies. And that's where we get institutional review boards. So though they weren't a thing, or they weren't federally mandated as a thing when Zimbardo did this, but shortly after they were. And so it's not surprising that, one of the first things that shows up in PubMed is a response going, oh my God, this is the worst thing I've ever heard. Because that sort of thing was coming out more and more and sort of led to ethics committees being a requirement for any study that's funded in part by federal money.
And studies that happen on university campuses. So university campuses that conduct research have to be accredited by an outside accrediting body.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter where the money comes from. If you're conducting it at a university, you still have to comply with the university policies in order to be accredited.
Yeah. So Zimbardo gets a big old zero. He can't do this study.
Is this the most heinous thing that we've talked about?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Watson was real bad.
Watson is horrible.
Yep.
He tortured the baby a lot, and he lied about the history of science. Mm-hmm. Those are not equivalent ethically.
No.
Let me be very clear. But he did both of those things.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't care that much about ethics being a line where you place things in relation to each other.
Right, yeah.
Things can just be bad.
Right, yeah.
This can just be bad.
Yeah. This is on the bad side of the line. This is definitely bad.
It is on the bad.
This is, yeah, yep.
It shouldn't have been done.
It should not have been done.
Insane that it was done. How many people had to fail on moral and ethical grounds for this to have been done?
Yeah.
So bizarre that the source is one man who makes money from its retelling.
And going back to the fact that even if you were somehow, if somehow you didn't think this was unethical, the things he did actually made it a worse study. The fact that he was himself mm-hmm. this huge confound.
Yeah, and I was thinking about Milgram a lot because Milgram, if you remember, mm-hmm. had the subject doing the shocking,
yes.
had the actor yes. receiving shocks, yes. had the actor yes. dressed up in the
yes.
lab coat,
yes.
had a second observer mm-hmm. observing the interactions, and then had an observer observing the observer.
Right. Yes.
And everybody was reporting yes. things, right?
Yeah.
He didn't enter, as far as I know, from mm-hmm. what I read.
Yeah.
Milgram himself did not enter into this. Right. Milgram wasn't enticing people right. to shock people.
Right. Yes.
And Zimbardo's like, it's me. I'm the superintendent. I'm in charge of everything. I'm the leader of this prison. This is a very real prison. You are all very real prisoners.
Right. If he is trying to say that this...
It just happened. It just happened.
And that's...
Because of the physical environment of the prison.
If anything, this just seems like another authority experiment. Like, if anything, he just did Milgram, but he was part of it. That's
yeah, I was thinking about that too, of the obedience to authority. Yeah. Zimbardo is obviously the authority. Yeah. Zimbardo is the one paying
yes.
them. Everyone wants to perform how Zimbardo right. wants the outcome to right. be so that they get paid right. and they get adoration yes. and approval.
Yes.
From the authority yes. figure.
Oof.
We could genuinely talk for like all next season.
Oh.
I don't want to.
Because again, goal number two, emotional
goal
well-being.
Two, emotional well-being. But there's just so much complexity
yeah.
and it becomes so difficult to remember that the underlying theoretical experimental framework is prison reform. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's so depressing
yes.
that this is the study.
Yes.
That everyone thinks of for prisons
right.
that's trying to make a point about prisons
right.
and it's wrong in every right. single way.
Yes. So did we succeed in goal number two? Are we emotionally broken by this?
I will have to get back to you. I will have to see how broken Jeff is emotionally.
Right. Yes.
How much transference there is.
As long as you're just injuring your partner, then that's what we're after.
No. Because if I haven't injured him, then obviously I haven't done an overtly expansive amount of waving my arms around and ranting and raving, right? Which means that I'm okay. So he's like a proxy output of, if Jeff is okay, then I'm okay. If Jeff is not okay, then none of us are okay.
Nice to have a guinea pig.
A canary, yeah.
A canary. Okay.
But in very good news,
yes,
we have, at the end of this episode,
yes.
an absolutely incredibly legitimate
yes.
pop culture reference of the
we
day.
We do. Is it? Mm-hmm. And this one is not related to nu metal?
Everything in the world is related to nu metal, so
fair.
That's a false
fair.
Question.
Fair.
It's not a real question.
it was a trap. You didn't fall for it.
So the real question is, does this study deserve a definitely legitimate pop culture reference of the day? And the answer is no. But we get one anyway. And it's mostly because I love to talk about this movie
mm-hmm.
the most.
Okay.
And the movie is...
Mm-hmm.
Alien Prometheus. Mm. Did you ever watch Alien Prometheus?
Never watched it once.
Well, that's horrible. I don't know how we're going to do this then. Or you can't question my interpretation and I'm automatically correct.
Sounds good to me.
So, in Alien Prometheus, there's a very, very, very rich billionaire who doesn't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he hires a whole bunch of scientists to get on a spaceship where he doesn't tell them where they're going. Mm-hmm. He doesn't tell them if they'll ever be back.
Okay.
He doesn't tell them what they're doing. Uh-huh. He just says, I will give you money. You're a scientist. Come on my spaceship.
Great.
The scientists go on the spaceship. They go to a planet where obviously there's aliens. Mm-hmm. And this movie received intense, intense criticism when it came out because one of the scientists on this foreign planet takes his helmet off and touches an alien. That's how he transfers aliens back to the ship. Yeah. Aliens happen. And people were like, scientists would never take their helmets off. Scientists would never take their helmets off. They would never touch an alien. They're scientists. They know about keeping their gloves on. I'm a scientist. I keep my gloves on. This movie's horrible. Who wrote this movie? And my soapbox for the last 12 years, I believe, since this movie came out, is these are not normal quote-unquote scientists. Mm-hmm. These are scientists who self-selected by agreeing to go on a spaceship to a place where they don't know where they're going. They don't know if they're ever coming back. They don't have any ties on this earth. They don't follow the rules of society. Mm-hmm. They go on grand adventures, right? These aren't rule-following scientists. These are risk-taking scientists. They have already proven that by taking the giant risk of going on the spaceship.
Right.
And very obviously, this is commentary on how Philip Zimbardo claimed that his population was a, quote, normal population. Everyone participating in the Stanford Prison Experiment read an advertisement that said, I will give you $15 if you participate in a study of prisons.
Right.
And those people who signed up read that and they said, yeah, give me $15. I will be in a study of prisons. I would posit that probably if you gave that advertisement to 100 people, maybe five would sign up. Maybe.
Yeah.
And I would argue that those five are not representative of a, quote, normal population.
Right.
What do you think?
I think this is clear evidence that Alien Prometheus is nothing more and nothing less than the most incisive commentary on Philip Zimbardo's studies that has ever been made. I fully concur.
I'm going to clip you saying that and just play it back to myself over and over again because nobody agrees with me about Prometheus. Everyone says, it's trash. It's a trash movie.
No.
And I'm like, you know nothing about scientists. You have never been around scientists.
And you've never read about the Stanford Prison Experiment.
And you've never read about the Stanford Prison Experiment, in part because it's not easy to read about the Stanford Prison Experiment. But also,
in addition, we can tell. I haven't seen Alien Prometheus because I heard all the bad press about it. But now that I know the truth, I'm going to see if I can watch it tonight.
Oh my God, I love that movie. I genuinely, unironically, from my heart, the first time I watched it, I was like, this movie is incredible. This movie is so wonderful.
Yeah.
I truly do not trust people who don't like Alien Prometheus. If someone tells me they don't like it, I remember forever that they told me that they don't like Alien Prometheus. And I question their morals and their ethics and their place in my life. If they don't like Alien Prometheus.
It's the system of a down of movies, is what you're saying.
I don't want to say that because I want System of a Down to come back and make System of a Down the movie. Just for me, it can be just them eating lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that movie where they just eat dinner?
My Dinner with Andre.
My Dinner with Andre. Yeah. It could just be My Dinner with Andre, but My Dinner with Sister Abigail.
Did you know that that is the ideal movie, as far as I'm concerned, is My Dinner
with Andre? All right, I'll watch My Dinner with Andre. You watch Alien Prometheus. We'll come back reinvigorated, ready for season 3.
Bear in mind that My Dinner with Andre was made around the same time as the Stanford Prison Experiment was done. So there's some weird racism in it.
Actually, there's no racism in the Stanford Prison Experiment.
Touche.
And you know that because it reports that in the Naval Reports 1973. You might open that book and you say, oh, this is actually about the ocean floor and oceanography and mapping the ocean floor.
And some biographies of Dr. Monk.
And some biographies. But you just have to flip past those. And that's where you get to the very clear and definitive statement that there was never racism in the Stanford Prison Experiment.
So are we done with this?
We are so done. We're at the end of a music festival, then, right? It's day 6. There's no water. There's no showers. We have to get out of here. We have to go home. No one's enjoying themselves. This is horrible for everyone. We have to be done.
We've got to be done.
We're done.
We're done with the... Have we done all of it? Have we done every... Are there even... Is there even psychology that we haven't talked about yet?
There's a really interesting study that was referenced in the Stanford Prison Experiment that I want to read because I've never read it. Probably you remember this one, but the study where the man pretended to need to be checked in to an inpatient mental health facility, mental asylum, and then immediately after he was checked in, he acted as, quote, normal as possible to try to get released in order to see how pathologized people would claim that he was, even if he was exhibiting normal behaviors.
Right.
I completely forgot about that study, but it's referenced in the Stanford Prison Experiment.
That sounds more ethical.
It involves asylums of the 70s, which are hell on earth. Absolutely.
Right, but at least he checked himself in rather than...
I believe it was also other people.
Ooh. Yeah, okay. Now.
But I haven't read it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Okay, so that'll be great.
Season 3.
Season 3, we can do that. We've got some more stuff on the list. We've got basketball with gorillas.
The marshmallow study.
We've got marshmallows. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff.
We could read Freud.
We could read some Freud.
Pre-cocaine or post-cocaine.
Whatever you prefer. Yeah, we could do some Freud. No one's read Freud.
No one has read Freud.
That's true.
You would have to read Freud because it's in German.
I am not reading it in German. Yeah, so we got plenty of stuff left to go. We can even return to some of the Stanford Prison Experiment follow-ups. We said we might talk about some structural stuff with how science gets done.
Oh, and there's the really cool conformity experiments. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really want to read those. So season 3, certainly any day now.
So many ideas. All right. So yeah, if folks are enjoying this, if folks want to hear more, let us know because we got plenty more to do. I hope you enjoyed season 2. Bye.
Au revoir.
Did you stop?
Yeah, 2002.
Oh my God, that's so recent.
Yeah. After we knew so much about human subjects protection.
Oh my God. Oh, that's so recent.
Institutional review boards.
That's so recent.
And then he became president of the APA.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Wonderful. 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 This whole experiment is wonderful.